What's up, Woodturners? I'm Braxton Worthland, and I'm joined by my distinguished co-hosts, Mr. Jason Rausch and Mr. Carl Jacobson, and this is episode number one of the Woodturners Anonymous Podcast. How are you guys doing tonight?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm doing great. How about you, Jason?
Oh, doing great. I'm glad we could kick this off.
Yeah, me too. I'm excited. Before we start rolling, I did want to give some special thanks to a few people out there who kind of got me personally motivated to kind of get a podcast rolling. First is Mr. Diami Plotke from the Modern Woodworkers Association podcast, and also Mr. Sean Rubino from the Dusty Life. Actually, all those dudes on the Dusty Life have really motivated me. John Berard from MakerCast and Nick Ferry from the Woodworking podcast. Everybody is really, really offered advice and, you know, kind of got me motivated to get out there and do stuff. Also, my co-host, Mr. Jason Rausch, for getting with me and Carl and kind of lighting a fire and getting us rolling. And Carl, you too, thank you for agreeing to be on the podcast with us. I'm super excited.
Absolutely. I think it's going to be a blast.
I'm really looking forward to it myself. I think all three of us really can bring some great input together to make this great.
Yeah, I think it should be good. I'm real excited. We'll have links to everybody's, you know, different podcasts and stuff like that in the show notes, so you listeners can check that out. They'll be available at www.wtapodcast.com. They've all got amazing podcasts. They're super fun to listen to. They'll have kind of unique styles, and you should check them out. So, guys, let's start out with what's on the lathe. Carl, what are you working on these days?
I am just finishing up a Stingray box. I've been doing it live on Twitch over the last week or so, and it all kind of came together tonight. All I have to do is put a couple of coats of finish on the base I made for it. I used a transparent blue dye to kind of make it look like water. The Stingray box is kind of a doing some off-center turning on it to make the wings, so it's kind of unique.
Yeah, those things are really cool. I'd like to try one. It looks like a lot of fun to turn.
Yeah, I first saw it. I believe I'll put it in the show notes, but I can't remember the guy's name. But I believe he's from New Zealand, and he came up with the idea quite a while ago. And it's just kind of unique, something you're not gonna see all the time.
Yeah, I like the different corners. You know, it's two corners going up, two corners going down. So it gives it a really cool look, really up.
Yeah.
It's like appealing to look at, and it seems like it'd be cool to pick up and feel and hold. I like pieces like that kind of draw you in and make you want to pick them up and kind of try to figure out how they were made.
Right, right. Yep.
What about you, Jason? What are you working on?
So last year I did a bowl where I did an inlay with epoxy of a Mickey Mouse head, and I had a lady locally ask me to make her one for her mother after she saw it, and I went through the whole process of making this thing, and the night before I was supposed to deliver it, I was doing the last work, and it came off the lathe, hit the ground, and shattered, and it was heartbreaking. So I built a whole nother one. And, of course, by this time, it was well past the time she needed it. And she basically said, well, I don't really need it now. So I kind of let it sit off to the side, half finished. Well, I'm just now finally putting it back on the lathe and getting that bowl finished, because I've had several people express an interest in possibly buying it. So I guess that kind of lights a fire under me when somebody starts flashing money at me. And then the other thing is, it's really simple. I've turned, I don't know, probably a couple hundred pens by this point, and to the point where, you know, you go cross-eyed. But I was in a woodcraft store, and I was looking at pen blanks, and I found this really cool, kind of like stabilized, I don't even know what the original wood was, but it was dyed this, like, I don't know, it's almost like an aqua teal color, and it was stabilized. And it just looks so cool. And I said, I have to buy this, and I'm going to make myself a cigar pen, because I tend to find the bigger pens are a little more comfortable in my hand. So that's my other project right now. I'm going to turn that pen, and that's going to be my pen. No one gets it.
Nice.
Nice.
I've never done that. I've turned tons of pens, but I don't have a pen of my own. Like, I'll have a few around, that I'll just pick up and use, but usually they get sold or given away. But yeah, I don't have a my pen that I made for myself.
Well, that was a funny thing. I had a maple cigar pen that I'd made for myself, and about a month after I made it, I was surprised by my girlfriend that we needed to give a gift to this girl who had just graduated from high school. And I said, oh no, what am I going to give her? And I said, you know what? I've got one pen. I got one pen and it still looked good because I barely used it. And I said, well, I guess I'm giving this away. And that was it. So since then I haven't had a pen for myself. So
that's cool.
Yeah.
So what are you working on, Braxton?
Right now I have a Live Edge Box Elder bowl that I'm turning. I'm filming a video of that for my YouTube channel. That was a piece of wood that Charlie Kasorik gave me when he was here in town. So I was turning that up and was going to make a little video. We'll leave a link to Charlie in the show notes. You can check out. He's got a really cool channel. And then also, that's a commission for like a Harry Potter wand. And actually, Carl, I saw you just uploaded a video of how to turn one. That was kind of cool. But yeah, this one, I haven't decided if I'll film it or not. I was going to basically turn the the wand, like the business end of the wand, I guess. And then the handle, she wanted it kind of more contoured for your hand. So I was going to just turn the end of the wand and then take it off the lathe and kind of cut it on the bandsaw and shape it a little bit by hand. So I think it should be pretty cool. It's just out of walnut. She was like super Harry Potter fan, like fanatic. So she's like, this girl emailed me and was like, okay, it needs to be 15 inches long and this has to weigh over 2.7 ounces. And I'm just like, I emailed her back. She sent me pictures of wands that she liked, and there were wands that, you know, they're for sale, but people are charging $200 or $300 for these custom wands. And I'm like, look, you know, there's no way I can sit down and commit the amount of time to hand carving all this stuff. I was like, so I'll get it as close as possible to what you're looking for. If you like it, cool. If not, I can probably find somebody else to buy it. And she was cool with that. So
yeah
it sounds like she had more specs than a custom precision engine part.
Yeah it was pretty ridiculous. Luckily, she'll never listen to this podcast. So
I've made a few wands, and I've been asked the same thing, asked to make a couple, and they send you pictures. It's like, wow, you don't have a week to hand carve that.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
The last two I burnt them with the Lynchburg machine, and it's kind of cool. It gives it that, you know, rustic, fiery look to it. So, I decided to do a YouTube video and show burning that thing.
Nice. That's cool. Yeah, I had made one for her. It turned out pretty good, but I kind of want to make another one just to see if I can get it closer to what she wanted. But the first one, it was out of a piece of walnut, and I uncovered a crack inside of it that I didn't – you couldn't see it on the outside till I got it all turned down. So I filled that with some bronze powder – or brass powder and CA. So it looks kind of cool with it's got some, you know, like a little brass streak that kind of shines through. And I'm not a Harry Potter fan, so I had no idea about this, but apparently this is what my wife tells me, that all the Harry Potter wands have some kind of like core of something, you know, it's like unicorn bone core or something. So she was like, yeah, it's kind of cool. It's like the special core coming through. So I was like, yeah, all right. Okay. I meant to do that.
Yeah, that was all by plan.
Yeah, so why don't we get into our main topic of the night? That's basically just introductions and backgrounds and, you know, kind of letting the listeners know who we are and what we like to do and all that good stuff.
Yeah, sounds
so
good.
Who wants to start? Well,
Carl, do you you want to go?
You beat me to it. I was just about to say, please, somebody else go first.
Well, I mean, I don't care.
I'll go ahead and start. I've been woodworking almost my entire life, not professionally or anything, but I started woodworking with my grandfather when I was old enough to walk. He had me out in the shop pounding nails into 2x4s just to get me going. But I didn't get into wood turning until my mid to late 20s. And it was just kind of, I've always enjoyed woodworking. I've remodeled homes and you know, built cabinets and stuff like that. But just kind of on a fluke, I went down to visit some friends and walked into his shop, and he had a maple and walnut clock hanging on the wall. And I don't know what it was. It just caught my eye, and I said, "How'd you do that?" And I've been turning ever since. I went home and kind of put together a little lathe with a motor I had laying around in the shop, and the next thing I know, I was on looking in the paper for a lathe. And that was about 22 years ago, I think.
Wow.
Yeah. And same thing with YouTube. It was kind of a fluke. Some guys at work asked me to do a duck call. They were duck hunters. And I took it back to work the next day. And they were just like, I don't know, kind of shocked or, you know, impressed that I could go home and make that quick. And YouTube had just started, and I thought, well, I don't know, maybe somebody else wants to see how it's done. And so that's how I started doing videos. I put one up, and all of a sudden people start asking you questions and start requesting stuff, and I just kept going. Here we are.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That really is to have that kind of legacy, if you will, starting from basically something you hadn't even considered to where you're at now.
Yeah.
I think that's great.
Yeah, it wasn't planned at all, or, you know, I mean, I was working at Freightliner Trucks I worked there for 20 years. I was a foreman in the paint department. So it wasn't like something I was trying to get into a woodworking career or anything. I wasn't planning on that.
Cool. How, what was your first lathe? What kind of lathe did you start with? You said you were looking through the paper to find one.
A Craftsman. My first lathe was a Craftsman. I found it in the paper. It came with four or five tools, and I struggled with them. You know, I never did take any classes, which I should have. I should have, you know, just started out, going to the local woodcraft or whatever and taking some classes, but I didn't. I was just kind of flipping through books and reading as much as I could. I think I even rented some DVDs and stuff back then. Or I don't know, maybe it was VHS. It was that long ago. But
for our younger listeners, that is
right. They might not even know what the paper is.
Right.
now it's all Craigslist.
Yeah.
I just kind of struggled my way through it, and I think when I bought the tools that came with it were very inexpensive tools, and they wouldn't hold an edge or cut well at all. And when I finally bought my first real tool and learned how to sharpen it, it was like, wow, this is how it's supposed to be right here.
Like a whole new world.
I was, like I said, I kind of rigged up a little motor and put a faceplate on it for probably four or five projects until I got the lathe going. But yeah, and then I just kept, once I figured out I enjoyed it, I went ahead and started looking for another lathe. And then I got a Delta. And some of you might remember the squeaky lathe that I had in the corner. It was. But it was
awesome. I remember that one. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I was always squirting WD-40 on that pulley.
by the gallon.
By the gallon. But yeah, it was, you know, it was great. That's what I started out doing, videos on YouTube, and yeah, it's all good. And just slowly, you know, once you figure out it's something that you really enjoy and want to do, and that's when you start, you know, moving up and investing the money into it to, you know, really get some nice tools.
Sometimes it's scary when you think back on how much you've spent on tools.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. That's one good thing about, you know, this wood turning or even woodworking in general is it's a hobby that can potentially make you money or at very least pay for itself, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
Which is nice.
Yeah. My lathe now, I think I had two or three cars that combined cost less than that, less than my lathe now. But it's nice. It is nice. Turns into, something you can generate some revenue from. And if it's something you enjoy, that's just a win-win.
You want to go next, Braxton? Or?
Sure. Yeah, I'll go next. I started wood turning in high school, but I was, woodworking and building stuff before that. My friends and I would go out and steal wood from construction sites and build ramps to ride our bikes on. But I really started, actually woodworking with, bandsaws and that type of thing in junior high school. And then once I got into high school, I took wood shop all through high school. And that's really where I started turning. It was on an old Powermatic. I think that's pretty much the lathe standard for high school wood shops. But I glued together my first blank, or my first bowl that I did was like a walnut and oak or maple or something. I'll have to dig it out and find. But it was like glued together face grain to face grain, like a big block, basically. Back then, I had no idea that you could take a piece of a tree and put it on the lathe and make like a live edge bowl or a solid bowl. So I was gluing lots of stuff together, mostly the scraps from everybody else's projects. And then my woodshop instructor would just kind of put a tool in my hand, be like, this is how you do it. And then he'd just walk away and leave me alone and let me go to town, which was a lot of fun. And then after high school, I didn't really have a place to turn, so I kind of got away from that and building stuff until I got a little older when I finally bought a house. Then I had a garage, started accumulating tools, and one of the first tools I got after I got my garage was a Harbor Freight lathe. My wife got me that for Christmas, and so I started turning like crazy on that. And I got connected with a woodworking club here in town in Las Vegas, where I'm from, the Sin City Woodworkers. And through that, I was able to meet Jimmy Clues. A lot of you listeners might be familiar with Jimmy. He's a world-renowned turner. He's just an amazing guy, and he gives private classes at his house. So there's a few of us that get together, one or two nights a month over at Jimmy's and just turn with him, and he's a wealth of knowledge. That's really, really brought my turning to the next level, just having a bit of instruction. I think for anybody listening, that would be – it's a great thing to do, especially if you're just getting into it. Go find a turning club or go find, like Carl was saying, a woodcraft or something like that where you can get some instruction or some hands-on stuff from somebody. But, so after meeting up with Jimmy, I got rid of my Harbor Freight lathe and upgraded the lathe, and that's really helped too. So it's having a more powerful lathe has helped a lot in being able to turn larger things and get better quality cuts and be less frustrated. So it's a lot of fun. It's really what I want to focus on and what I want to do. I'd love to be a professional wood turner and eventually maybe teach people how to do stuff at symposiums. I think that'd be a lot of fun and just travel around and meet people and turn wood.
Absolutely. And you're right. When you get together with other turners and you start learning, man, that's a lot of fun. And equally as fun, at least for me, is when I get somebody who hasn't turned much or hasn't turned something specifically, and they're asking me to show them, which doesn't happen that often, but I have done that a couple of times. One of my I have very few local woodworkers, but one of my friends, just shout out to Paul Desmond. He lives just up the about 45 minutes up the street from me here. And Paul turns, and he came over one time, and we turned a pen that day. He had never turned a pen before, and there's so much satisfaction in just saying, somebody saying, hey, will you show me how to do this? And then you do it, and they walk away with one. That's equal satisfaction for yourself as it is for the person who's walking away with that thing they just learned to make.
Yeah, it's really cool. You're just passing along the trade.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree. When fairly recently, I had was able to have a whole bunch of people over at the house and a bunch of YouTubers, and we all turned stuff. Like, that's basically what we did all night long, was turn stuff. So I think all said and done, we turned about 8 bowls in one night, just all out of small chunks of wood that I had laying around. And some people had never picked up a lathe tool before, and other people had more experience with it. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. I love to pass on the knowledge with people and watch them enjoy it. And then that's the great thing about wood turning too. Like, it's so fast. It's almost like instant gratification. You know, it's not like you're building an entertainment center for a month and a half.
Right.
I think that's too why I'm drawn to it so much. You know, is I don't want to work on a project for 2 weeks. You come out here for a couple hours and you're done with something. You know, a lot of times, depending on the project, I mean, it doesn't take long at all. And Braxton, I could not agree more about joining local clubs and getting hands-on help with it, whether it's through the club or just going over to friends. You know, I always try and, you know, you can watch YouTube videos all day long, but there is nothing like being right there and having somebody help you, you know, with issues.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, especially somebody who's super experienced with it, too. That really helps. We'll go turn with Jimmy, and for the first couple of times, I'd be making a cut, and he'd be on the other side of the room, and he'd be like, close up your flute. Your flute's too far open. Like, he would just hear it and he would know that the cut wasn't right. Or he'd come over and put his hand, one hand on the tool and just, you know, twist the tool just a couple of degrees. And then all of a sudden it would just cut like a dream. So yeah, definitely having some assistance with it really, really makes a big difference.
Yeah. Yep.
So what about you, Jason? How'd you get into this?
So I can tell you that as long as I can remember, since I was a kid, I've loved woodworking, just the hobby itself. But I can't say that I was doing much when I was younger. I was mostly watching like Norm and, you know, shows like that on TV. And every now and then you'd catch like something on PBS that would be woodworking oriented. And I fell in love with it from an early age. But I was kind of the same way, Braxton. I never really had a place I could do my woodworking until I bought my first home 8 years ago. And when I bought my home, that was like when I had a garage and I was like, yeah, I gotta do something here. But the thing was, is that it took me several years because I didn't even start really doing any major woodworking until we were in the house almost like 4 years. And I just happened to start watching some YouTube videos and I started getting into this like, oh man, I gotta do this. Why have I waited so long? So, and Carl, you're, I'm going to inflate your ego a little, buddy. it was you, Frank Howarth, and Alan Stratton. You guys were the ones that I was watching religiously, and I said, that's what I want to do. I want to turn. That looks like so much fun. So, Braxton, it's funny because you and I have had almost identical when it came to equipment. I started off with a Harbor Freight lathe, just like you did, and that little lathe, or I don't say little, it was actually, you know, it's a decent sized lathe, actually. It didn't owe me anything when I got rid of it, because I had turned some pretty big stuff on, mostly segmented bowl type stuff. That was mostly the Frank Howarth, influence. And then eventually I upgraded to the Grizzly G0766, which I think is the same model you have now, Braxton.
Yeah, right? Yeah, that's what I've got.
You painted yours. So I have that lathe now. And it's just so much fun to be able to, you know, chuck a giant piece of wood on there, or even if it's just something small. And but the segmented stuff is really where I really enjoy. So the funny thing is, we were talking about being able to just chuck a piece of wood and be able to have a project done in like an hour or something. That is true. I do projects like that, but sometimes I get into the segmented projects that it might be a week's worth of prep, you know, of cutting pieces and gluing the rings and sanding and stacking. And so sometimes that can turn into a couple weeks worth of work when it's all said and done, but not normally.
Yeah, that's very true. I didn't think about that. I haven't really delved in the world of segmented stuff beyond bangle bracelets.
I absolutely love segmented, but it is a lot of work, and you do have to invest some time in it. And that's why you don't see me doing a whole lot of segmented bowls on my YouTube channel, because it really does take a lot of time to build that whole thing up.
Yeah. I've just played around with segmenting just a little bit too. And yeah, it's just, there's a lot of work that goes into it, but it's amazing. Some of the segmented stuff out there. I mean, the patterns and that they come up with is just incredible. But you're right. It's like building the entertainment center.
You know? Yeah, it's a serious commitment, some of that stuff. And now there's a lot of easier ways to do it now, like that wedgie sled, and then there's the miter set.
Yes.
That seems that's my kind of thing. Like I really want to get one of those, and then I think that would help me get into it more, because it's way less setup. Like the wedgie sleds are cool, but I don't know, like building sleds and building jigs is not my thing. I just want to like have the something, you know, like that miter set. Here it is. Cluck it down on the table saw, hook it up, and you're ready to go without having to, worry about cutting the wedges at exactly the right. You know, somebody's already taken the guesswork out of it for me, and I can just have fun with it.
Yeah,
absolutely. When I first started doing the segmented stuff, I built some sleds and I had to tweak them. And once I got them tweaked, I left them like that. You know, I don't ever change them. So like if I do a standard like 12 segment ring, I know that I've got that sled set up and it's adjusted to my saw. And I know that I can run segments through that thing all day long, and they're near perfect now because of all the little adjustment. But like you said, if you just want to go out there and just do it without having to even think about it, yeah, one of those is really the way to go.
Yeah, I played around with segmenting just a little bit, but it was always frustrated because I could never get them perfect, and I made the wedgie sled. I can think about a year ago. And I got tired of doing test pieces because they were always perfect with it. It just, and it's like finally it's just okay. It works every time. But then I just got the miter set about 2 months ago, and I've been playing around with it, and it's the same way. It's just you don't need to do test pieces. It's perfect every time. All you do is drop the pins in and you're done.
I'm going to have to look at that.
Yeah, they're cool. I actually saw it for the first time on your channel, Carl. I wasn't familiar with it. And then I say you use it, and I was like, man, I need to check this thing out.
Yeah, so it has – there's two of them. You can get a standard one for doing, things like picture frames and stuff like that. And then they have a segmented one. And because I'm not a big segmenter, I didn't quite understand all the little angles. So on the regular one, you can go from, four segments, I think, to 20. But because it has adjustments on it, you can actually use the standard one to get all those little angles in between. If you're really into segmenting, that's, you know all that and know how to figure all that out. It has little step thing and everything with it to figure out every possible angle you could ever want.
Yeah.
That's pretty neat.
Well, I think this is probably a good place to wrap it up. So I want to thank you guys for the first episode. It was lots of fun. It was fun to get to know you guys a little better. Hope the listeners enjoyed it. Thank you, listeners, too, for tuning in to the first episode of the Woodturners Anonymous podcast. If you'd like to find out more about us, you can head over to www.wtapodcast.com, where you'll find the show notes, links to everything we mentioned, more info on us, your hosts, and also all our different social medias. Keep up to date with us on a daily basis. You can check us out on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. And in future episodes, we'll be answering questions from you guys and also looking for suggested show topics. So keep an eye out on our social medias. We'll be asking, what do you guys want to talk about or if you've got any questions. And until next time, keep the shaving flying. Oh, I screwed that part up. Good thing it's the first episode.
That's all right.
Keep the shavings flying. We'll see you guys later.
See you later.
See you guys.